Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Richard Diamond, Private Detective.
Fibber McGee and Molly.
The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah. Radio Theater.
In the air.
Dedicated to man's imagination, the theater of the mind.
You know what our call letters WGN stand for, don't you?
WGN Radio Theater.
The special three-hour presentation.
With Carl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
All right, about 9 minutes after 11 p.m. here on the WGN Radio Theater. This is program 287 in the series. Happy Memorial Day, everyone. In just an hour, it'll be Memorial Day. What do you think of that, Lisa Wolf?
Yeah, well, that's what it is.
That's what it is.
That's just what it is.
And, you know, it was a memorable show last night with you and Mike Costello, who's here right now.
Yep.
We had some fun.
Thank you for covering.
Thank you. We had a good show. I think we're all had a good show.
It was fun. Lisa let me talk a little bit.
She never lets me talk.
Just a word. I got to let him talk a word or two for sure. Yeah.
And we have Ashley Byhan as our producer. She did a great job last night, and she is here to do a great job tonight. She is taking Shante's place for this weekend. We do appreciate you, Ashley. Thank you so much for all you did. And in this three-hour program tonight, we'll be tuning into Escape, The Charlie McCarthy Show, and The New Adventures of Michael Shane. And it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride. So let's play our game, Cat's Pride. Crack the quote. What's the movie, Lisa?
The movie is Die Hard from 1988.
Die Hard, yeah. Bruce Willis.
Yep.
Great film.
Yep.
All right, the number to call, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. What do they win?
They are going to win a Never Measure. I'll talk a little bit about it, but you can easily center, level, and hang your wall decorations fast. No measuring tape, no calculating. It's a really cool device.
Very good. All right, 312-981-7200. We'll take the 10th caller. 10th caller, give us a call right now. Play the game live on the air with us. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
All right, we're going to do it. We're going to do Die Hard from 1988, and we have John on the phone. Hey, John.
Hello.
Good to hear from you. You ready to play the game?
Am I ever.
All right, let's do this. Quote number one, I say a little prayer and hope my dreams will take me there.
I say a little prayer for you.
Forever and ever.
Ever and ever.
We're so talented. Number two, come out.
We're going to get a record deal out of this.
Well, maybe,
John,
maybe you,
the
Carl.
The three of us. It's going to be like a trio.
Yeah, we're good.
You betcha.
Oh, gosh. Number two, come out to the coast. We'll get together, have a few laughs. Number number three, I'm not being mean, just being me. I could see saying that.
Oh, boy. I'm going to need help from John here. I have no clue.
Yeah. Boy, this is a tough one. I was expecting something easy, like, welcome to the potty pal.
Right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, well,
you know, this was the vehicle that launched Reginald Val Johnson's career in the sitcom Family Matters, which turned out to be the sitcom that launched Steve Urkel's career.
I think you need to be a consultant on this show here, John.
You know what?
We're going to have to hire you.
The thing is, John, I would have made it easy for you, but I like to make it difficult on Carl. So I'm sorry you got the brunt of this one. What do you think?
Throw the baby out with the bathwater, without you.
That's right. What do you want to do?
Speaking of bathwater, that's why I wasn't here yesterday. I was taking a bath.
He took a really long bath. But he smells good today.
Whiplash, I was taking a bath.
There we go. Let's keep
we
it up.
We are a singing trio, the three of us.
On a Saturday night.
All right, so which one do you think it is, John?
What is it?
One, two, or three?
No, number three, maybe?
You like three. I'm not being just being me.
I'm going to go with two.
Two? Come out to the coast. We'll get together, have a few laughs.
Yeah, I'm going
like
to go
that?
With two.
Yeah,
I like
that
number
one, two. Number two.
Roger, you're on. You like two?
Number two. That sounds
good. Uh-oh, that's scary when Roger agrees with Carl.
Very
okay,
scary.
Let's hear it.
Come out to the coast. We'll get together, have a few laughs.
All right.
There it is.
There it
Hang
is.
Hang on a second.
But John, you said number three, and three and two, they're almost really like the same thing. So I'm going to go with that. And we have such a great prize for you, John. It's called a Never Measure, and it includes precise measuring, leveling, placement. It has an auto center feature, a locking screw on it. It's got a bubble vial for leveling, and it is veteran owned, made in the USA. And you never need to use a measuring tape or calculate fractions. It's called Never Measure, and you can check it out at nevermeasure.com. I just got one today, and I'm so excited to use it, and we're thrilled to send one over to you in Indiana.
Well, I'll tell you what. Since I live in an apartment, you can donate it to the veteran of your choice.
Oh, that's nice. Very nice.
Oh,
okay.
That's so nice. Well, the veterans make
now,
it.
If you want to send me down some Brown's chicken, I'd be more than happy.
Some Brown's chicken.
That I can't do, but congratulations on
the
win.
Way to go, John. Nice talking to you, buddy.
Yeah.
All right. Hey, and speaking of veterans, This is a holiday that I really do get serious about, because what would we do without our military in this country protecting us every single solitary day? And I think they deserve the most incredible salute. And we really want to thank every single one of our veterans and our military. And we really appreciate you, everything you do for us.
And, you know, I did want to mention, this is a federal holiday here in the U.S. And not only that, but, you know, it's more than picnics, and it's more than, you know, dinners and a day off of work. But it's remembering the people who actually died while serving, you know, our country.
Yeah,
so we
not only the people that died, certainly them, they gave the ultimate sacrifice, but all of our living veterans too, because, you know, they gave of their selves for years to support, you know, to keep us safe. And I got to tell you, this is a holiday that I'd like to really, that stands out among all the rest. So thank you, everyone listening that is a veteran. And of course, we want to remember all of our veterans who gave the ultimate sacrifice as well. But it's time now for Escape. This is a broadcast from August 21st, 1954. It's called 2 and 2 Make 4. It stars Tudor Owen, part one now of Escape.
Tired of the everyday grind? Ever dream of a life of romantic adventure? Want to get away from it all? We offer you Escape.
Escape, designed to free you from the four walls of today for a half hour of high adventure.
You are running over the fog-locked cliffs of Dover. By your side, a girl who believes you are a madman. And pursuing you, bent on destroying you, a man whose terrible secret you've stumbled upon, and from whom there is no escape.
Listen now as Escape brings you Walter Brown Newman's story, 2 and 2 Make 4.
My head hurt. I sat up and opened my eyes. Fog all around, thick and close and still. I could see trees and a few yards of dirt road. My watch was gone and my wallet. Rolled, slugged and rolled and dumped. But where? I scrambled to my feet and I stood there in the ditch, suddenly worried about the time. It would be bad to be late going aboard. As for the ship sailing without me, I stepped onto the road. Which way led back to Calais? Someone was coming. Hello? Qui est là? Why don't you answer? I can't see. Oh. Down the road, then across a field, alongside a brook. I ran till I thought my lungs would burst. I stopped to listen.
but the blood was pounding so I couldn't be sure I wasn't followed. I ran some more. The brook went under a small bridge. On it, leaning against the stone wall, looking down at me, was a girl with a knapsack on her back. I climbed up the bank. Mademoiselle, s'il vous plaît, mademoiselle...
I'm sorry, I don't speak French.
Did you hear those shots?
Shots?
A few minutes ago, right past my ear, almost blew my head off.
Well, you should tell the police or something. I have to be going. I have a long way to go.
No, wait a minute.
Sorry, I really...
No, wait. What time is it, please?
Well, not quite 6:45. The way it looks now, we'll have fog at least until noon.
Noon? You mean it's 6:45 in the morning?
Yes, of course in the morning. Well, I've got to...
Hold on. Which way is Calais?
Calais? Well, that way, about 20 miles.
20? I've got to make my ship. You mind if I walk along with you?
Well...
My name's David Parker.
Mine's Haydock, Emily Haydock.
I'm in the Merchant Marine, second mate on a freighter. You want a walking trip or something?
That's right.
I figured. The knapsack. American?
Yes.
Me too. I thought you were French at first.
Why was that?
Took it for granted. Most people in France are.
Well, I don't understand. We're in England, not France. Why should you think that you...
What do you mean, England? Didn't you just tell me we were 20 miles from Calais?
Yes, but Calais is somewhere out there across the English Channel in France.
And where do you say we are, you and me, now?
In England, of course, about 2 miles from Dover.
Now, look. I've been robbed and dumped out here in the countryside and shot at, so please don't make jokes.
I'm not.
What's today, quick?
Thursday, 10th of July. Why?
Then we're in France.
Look, I tell you,
when I registered at the hotel in Calais last night, I noticed the date. It was the 9th of July.
Now, look. You asked me where we are, and I told you. England, near Dover.
I suppose I didn't see the sunrise in Calais just an hour ago.
Sunrise. What sunrise? I've been up since 5. There's been no sun for a week. It's one of the worst fogs they've ever had.
Oh, drop it. I tell you, I saw it.
You're either joking or lying
or crazy. Wait a minute. No more of that lying, that crazy, do you hear? No more of that crazy.
Well, what else am I to think when you say you were shot at and you saw the sun? Sun today. And you insist you're in France when you're in England.
All right, Miss Haydock. Turn around. Now, what do you see alongside the road?
Gate. Stone wall.
Yeah, and in front of the gate.
A mailbox. Why?
And what does it say on the mailbox? Villa Monbijou. I don't know what Bijou means, but it's French. Now, what do you say now?
We're in England.
You don't know where to stop, do you? All right. I'm going into this villa, whatever it is, and phone for a taxi to take me to my ship. I was going to offer you a lift, but now I'd sooner cut my tongue out. How do you like that?
Oh, go to the devil. You're in England!
Bonjour. Parlez anglais? D'anglais compris? Say, is there anyone here who speaks English?
I speak English.
Oh, good. May I use your phone to call a taxi?
Of course. Won't you come in?
Thanks. I have no money on me, Mr.
Putney. Dr. Putney.
I haven't a penny with me, doctor, but I'll be able to get some from the clerk at the hotel, and I'll send you whatever the call costs with the taxi driver.
Oh, not at all. There's the phone.
Thanks. Hello? Oh, come on.
Service is always a bit slow at this hour.
I'm sorry. The fact is, I got angry with a silly girl out on the road.
Did you?
Yeah, you tried to kid me. Well, the joke will be on her when she's trudging along the road and sees me riding in my ease to Calais. Oh, come on.
Riding to Calais?
In a taxi. I wouldn't have minded if she'd let the joke drop, but no, she went on and on about this being England and that I was crazy to think otherwise.
Well, I'm afraid I don't understand the joke. I mean, this is England.
Look, I don't find it funny, Doctor. I thought I made that clear. The next one who tells me I'm in England when I know I'm in France, I swear I'll take...
You know you're in France?
Yes. Yes.
Sit down, young man.
Isn't this France?
England. Near Dover. How can I show you? Here's a copy of the London Times, yesterday.
Wednesday, July 9th. But the name on the mailbox, Villa Watsis, that's French.
Most of the villas have names like that. Montbijou, Sanssouci. Still, it's England. Sit down. I'm a physician, and I'd like to ask you...
Oh, no.
Young man! Young man!
And two make four. I repeated it like a charm, like they told me in the hospital. When you feel unsure of yourself, remember, two and two make four. There's an explanation for everything. Don't doubt yourself. After a while, I stopped trembling. I opened the gate and went out onto the road. And there was the girl.
Oh, everything all right?
Did you, come back to say I told you so?
No, Well, I thought you might need help. I thought that...
Watch out, there's a truck coming.
There's an inn just around the curve.
Get down, he might shoot you again. Get down.
Mr. Parker, please, that was a backfire, that's all it was.
Backfire?
Of course, what else could it be? There's an inn just around the curve and I have money. Wouldn't you like to have breakfast there and talk?
Oh, I'm all confused.
Anyone would be after a blow on the head.
No, it's not just being slugged. I wish it were only that, but with a case like me that...
You're not a case.
Oh, that's just it. I am. About 6 weeks ago, unloading cargo, a crate hit me on the head, scrambled my memory. They sent me to the hospital and the ship sailed without me. She's due back in Calais this afternoon. I was to report aboard if the treatment proved successful. They told me it was successful and discharged me yesterday, or maybe it wasn't yesterday, and none of it happened, and I'm imagining it all.
Now, try not to worry. It'll all come back to you.
Yeah, but suppose what comes back never really happened. That's the point, you see. That's the point. I remember a lot about yesterday, but what if I only think I remember, and it's all in my...
Now relax. We'll have breakfast in here. If you remember, you remember.
Yeah, but do I? I recall leaving the hospital and going to a hotel. Then I went to an all-night restaurant, and I remember leaving a bar at daybreak. Oh, sit down, Miss Haydock, please.
Thank you.
Yeah, I remember all that clearly. But an hour later, I'm in England, and that's impossible.
Well, you might have wandered aboard a channel steamer.
Oh, use your head. It's a 2 or 3 hour trip by boat.
Well, an airplane, then.
Oh, excuse me. I thought perhaps you'd like your coffee now while waiting for breakfast.
Yeah. Miss, is there an airfield nearby?
Oh, yes, sir, but it's not an object of interest for tourists today. Our churches is very nice, though.
How far away is it, the airfield?
Oh, you won't see no planes coming or going, sir. The BBC broadcast said no air traffic in or out of Dover for the 6th straight day. Oh, good morning, Mr. Smith Travers.
Breakfast, Rosie.
Yes, sir. Anything else for the present, sir?
No.
No air traffic 6 days in a row. You'd think that would teach them, but will it?
I beg your pardon.
I leave it to you. Is there any reason for maintaining this undependable method of transportation? A method absolutely at the mercy of the elements, when there's a cheaper, better, less bothersome, simpler, and always certain way of crossing the channel?
You mean the boats?
No, of course not. The tunnel, the channel, tunnel.
Tunnel?
Yes, of course. Rosie, I want coffee now.
Right, Mr. Smith Travers.
The channel tunnel. 20 miles through solid, impermeable chalk. In at Dover, out at Calais. Less than an hour's drive. No fuss.
I never heard of it. Is it something recent?
Recent? Oh, you're strangers here. Tourists, eh?
Yeah.
Well, you've heard of Napoleon Bonaparte.
Oh, yeah.
He had it dug by the 6th Corps of the Engineers of the Imperial Army. Took them 3 years. All done in secret, of course, for a surprise attack on England.
You mean to say there's actually a tunnel beneath the English Channel in use?
Certainly it's in use. I've been through it scores of times. Business, you know. Import-export. Just drove back from Kelly a few hours ago. Morning, Doctor.
Good morning, Smith Travers.
I was just advising them to go by way of the tunnel if they want to get to Kelly.
Yes, of course. Much the best way.
I did it in 23 minutes this morning. New carburetor, you know. Well, good morning to you, sir. Miss.
I must have seemed like a lunatic, Doctor, not knowing I was in England. You see, I was in Calais, and an hour later I was in England, and I didn't understand how that was possible. I didn't know about the tunnel beneath the channel.
Try not to excite yourself, my boy. Everything will soon be all right.
What?
I've brought someone with me. Constable.
This poor fellow?
Poor fellow? You mean... Oh, you do think I... But I told you... I didn't know about the tunnel. I must have gone through the tunnel.
He didn't know until Mr. Smith Travers told him.
Yes, I heard. But Mr. Smith Travers is also of the firm conviction that we British are descended from the 10 lost tribes of Israel, that Shakespeare never existed, and that after a bit more research, we'll be able to transmute base metals into gold. We know him and like him and humor his eccentricities. Come along, Mr. Parker. I think it in the public interest that you not be on the public streets.
Yeah, come along.
No. Listen. I was in Calais at sunrise. I can prove it. I just remembered the name of the hotel. The Hotel de la Mar. Phone them and they'll tell you that there's a David Parker registered there. They have my passport at the desk.
Give me a good
Let
one,
me
now,
go.
You're hurting him, you big bully.
I was in Calais. I was. Two and two make four.
You are listening to Two and Two Make Four, tonight's presentation of Escape.
That's the first portion of Escape. More after these words. Begin the Begin.
Would you like to dance?
Would I like to dance?
Yes.
I have two left feet. Don't step on either one of them.
I was talking to Roger.
Oh. Yes, I would love to dance. Thank you.
I bet you Roger knows how to dance. You know,
I took dancing lessons in junior high school.
Gosh.
And
That's a while back.
I know, but I've completely forgotten.
Well, that would make sense to me. You know, it's been, I don't know how many years. I don't want to guess.
I've never been a good dancer, where you're dancing with the other person.
Well, that's because
it
involves,
by myself.
You know why, don't you?
Disco.
That involves a girl.
Right.
And then you get, a little
nervous. Like girls.
I know, but, somebody texted and asked about your MyPillow and if it's still in the glass case.
Still in the glass case.
All right. Just checking.
Listen, if it wasn't in the glass case, you would know.
We would know. He's not real private about it.
No,
so.
I'd be calling you. Be like, I just broke the glass case.
All right. Well, I will make sure to let everybody know out there when that glass case has a crack in it.
One of these days. All right. Let's get back now to Escape.
And now back to Escape and the second act of Two and Two Make Four.
They took us to a room in the town hall. Dr. Putney, it turned out, was not only a physician, he was the local magistrate as well. For more than 3 hours, he questioned Miss Haydock and me in turn. He made us repeat our stories endlessly, where she met me, how I behaved, what I said, what she said, and all the rest of it. It was almost noon before he was finished. And watching the clock on the wall, my ship coming nearer to Calais with every tick, I was almost beside myself with anxiety.
You need care, my boy, rest and help. Now, we've a fine institution in Folkestone near here which can give you that care. A few weeks, possibly days.
Institution?
Look, I've got to get to Calais.
Miss Haydock, will you try to convince him it's for the best?
There's nothing wrong with me.
I'll try once more to show you reality, Mr. Parker. You say you were in France at sunrise.
I do, I was.
And you insist you were in England an hour later.
Look, please, call the Hotel de la Mer in Calais. I checked in there. There's bound to be a record of it. That will prove I'm telling the truth.
And if the call is made and it doesn't prove you're telling the truth, will you take my advice about the institution?
Yes.
Constable, put through a call to the Hotel de la Mer in Calais.
Yeah, very good, sir.
If the hotel bears out Mr. Parker's story, you'll let him go?
Miss Haydock, if it turns out that Mr. Parker is right, but how could he be?
2 and 2 make 4. 2 and 2 make 4.
What's that?
Yeah, I have the hotel, sir.
Use the constable's phone, Mr. Parker. I'll listen in on my extension.
Hello, desk clerk.
Hello.
Hello. Is there a Mr. Parker registered there, David Parker?
Parker? David Parker? Oh, oui, there was, but he has checked out since 2 hours ago.
But he couldn't have. You're mistaken.
Oh, no, sir, I am not. Not if you mean that Monsieur Parker is an American seaman. I returned his passport personally when I paid his bill. I have the...
I'm not even who I thought I was. All right, Dr. Putney, I'll go with you.
No, wait. Before you do, let me speak to you in private. Please.
May we, doctor? Would it be all right?
I'll give you 2 minutes. Constable, we can arrange for an ambulance to Folkestone.
Yes, sir.
Mr. Parker.
No, that's not my name.
2 and 2 make 4.
Yeah.
2 and 2 make 4.
Uh-huh.
You must have faith in yourself. If you're convinced you were in France one moment and in England an hour later, then that's the way it was.
But it's a physical impossibility.
No, it's not. You could have come through the tunnel.
There is no tunnel.
If a tunnel is the only explanation for what happened to you, then there is a tunnel. 2 and 2 make 4.
Yeah. You really believe my story?
I believe you.
All right, then. All right. What do I do now?
You tell me. Come on, you know the answer.
I find the man in the restaurant, the man who said there was a tunnel, Smith Travers.
Right. Open the window.
All right. I'll go first, and I'll help you down. Now, come on.
Hey, here's my knapsack.
Got it. Now you.
Time's up, I'm afraid. Miss Haydock, come back here. Miss Haydock! Mr. X, whatever your name is. Constable, stop them!
I'll do my best, sir.
Fog hit us before we'd run 20 feet. We dodged around corners, then stopped at a garage and looked up Mr. Smith Travers' address in a directory. It proved to be a little villa like a dozen others I'd seen that day. There was no answer when we knocked at the door, so we waited. And before very long, Mr. Smith Travers drove up in a light truck.
Look. The valise I left at the hotel in Calais. He's got it.
Good afternoon. I'll take that.
Yes, of course.
Yeah, my passport, too, please.
Yes, I see you've concluded the tunnel does exist.
That's right.
Blast, you're the first to ever have. It's a bit of bad luck, for me, that is. If I hadn't hit a flat tire halfway through, the passport and valise would be in ashes by now. You phoned the hotel in Calais.
Yes,
I thought you might. I heard you shouting at the inn about the hotel, so I drove over and... Didn't it make you doubt your senses when they told you checked out?
Oh, you have no idea.
Yes, I was counting on that.
Yeah, it rocked me, but only for a minute.
How the devil did you get in my machine in the first place?
Well, the way I figure, I was knocked on the head by some thug and robbed this morning in Calais. Whoever did it may have thrown me in your truck to get me out of sight.
I was never so surprised in my life. I mean to say, I skidded near Dover, sideswiped a tree, and heard the back door bang open. When I stopped and went back, there you were, lying with a bolt of my silk in your arms. Took my breath away. When you started to groan and sit up, I was beside myself.
What's the matter?
It just occurred to me. You're not English. Bad thing to have someone not in the government and a foreigner to boot to know about the tunnel. Security, you know.
Do you mean the British government knows of the tunnel?
No, it doesn't. No, I've sent letters to every prime minister since MacDonald, telling them about it. Charts, diagrams, descriptions. Useless? They think I'm a crank? I can't blame them. What would Mr. Eisenhower say if you told him there's a tunnel between London and New York? You see what I mean? I got acknowledgement just once. A CID man came around and blabbed the whole story to everyone. Told him to keep an eye on me as a dangerous lunatic.
The only way to protect the secret after that was to ride it like a mania, so I told everyone, too. Best security measure ever devised. And now, however, there are three of us who really know about the tunnel. It's awkward. I don't know what to do.
Oh, I can tell you exactly. You're going to take me back to Calais and now, otherwise I'll beat you to a pulp. I ought to anyway, making me doubt myself as you did.
Taking you into the tunnel. That might be the best way.
We'd never tell anyone, I swear it.
Yes. I don't want you to see the entrance and exit, though. You will have to wear blindfolds.
Agreed.
Now, let's get going, then. Yes, taking you into the tunnel is the best way.
Say, how much longer before we're in the tunnel?
You can take off the blindfolds now. We're in it.
How wonderful.
The tunnel? Yes, they did a fine job, the Sixth Corps. That lot they got for it. Boney flung them in the Russian campaign when they'd finished and saw to it they all died. Best way of keeping a secret, eh?
How did you learn of it?
Reading in the British Museum. I was broke and unemployed. I found an old diary by one of the engineers. Investigated and found it was true. Wrote to the government, told them about that. Well, it was too good to let it waste, so I set up a small import-export business. Cheaper transportation gives me an edge on my competitors.
Are we in Calais?
Well, no, but it's as far as you go. I've got to kill you. I can't let you live. It's too dangerous now that you know. The shotgun failed me twice today. Perhaps the revolver... Get out of the truck, please. Unless you want your blood all over the young lady, please get out.
All right.
Now, perhaps... Well, I won't think you cowardly if you turn your back.
Listen...
Oh, come now, no temporizing, just take it.
Yep.
Oh, dash it all.
Emily?
I think I'm going to faint.
Help me get him back into the truck, huh?
Just let me sit here for a moment.
Yeah.
David?
Huh?
We'll tell the authorities the truth about the tunnel and all.
Uh-huh.
Everyone ought to know.
Yeah.
It's too good a thing and makes travel and trade and communication so simple. We've no right to keep it a secret.
Check. We'll tell the authorities. We came to the end of the tunnel at exactly 2 o'clock by Miss Haydock's watch. Time and to spare in order to board my ship. We left Mr. Smith Travers in the truck and made our way into what was apparently a small warehouse. And from there, through a door, we found ourselves on the corner of a street, much like any other street in Calais. A fog had rolled in since sunrise, as thick as the one we'd left in England. Oh, one moment. I want to make a note of this street, or we'll never find the tunnel again. Hey, you got a pencil?
Mm-mm.
Oh, never mind. I have one.
There's no street sign.
No, up there on the side of the building. They don't put them on lampposts like we do in the States. All right, I've got it. Say, when do you get back to the States?
September 1st. School term starts on the 10th. I teach kindergarten in Baltimore.
Oh, we're supposed to put in at Baltimore Christmas week.
Well, that's marvelous. We could have Christmas Eve together.
Yeah, New Year's too, maybe. I'll look forward to that.
You'll write, meanwhile, won't you?
Oh, of course. You know, I'll never be able to thank you enough for what you did. What made you believe in me so strongly?
Oh, I don't know. You see, what's the matter?
I'm not sure we're walking toward the harbor. That's the trouble with a foreign city. You turn a corner and you're lost. And this dirty fog is so... Well, let's try this way.
Would that be a policeman in the doorway?
Where? Oh, yes. Yes, it is. Parlez anglais.
A little.
Which way is the harbor?
Turn at the next corner, to the left, and walk 4 streets.
Well, thank you.
How do you pronounce the name of the street I've written here?
Street?
Yeah.
There's no street.
No street? Well, what does it say?
In English, this way to the air raid shelter. We have put them on almost every building in Calais.
Air raid shelter? Then we'll never be able to find our way back to the tunnel.
Eh?
Gendarme, are you sure?
But of course. As sure as I am that two and two make four.
Escape, produced and directed by David Friedkin and Morton Fine, has brought you Two and Two Make Four, a story by Walter Newman. Featured in the cast were Shep Mankin, Joyce McCluskey, Tudor Owen, and Richard Peel. Also heard were Betty Harford, Dick Ryan, Melitza Milo, and James Barrett. Your announcer, Bill Anders. The special music for Escape is composed and conducted by Leith Stevens. Next week.
You're on a catch sailing the coral seas, snaking your way through the tricky channel toward an island of black pearls. While on the shore, waiting for you to land, is the man who has sworn your death, and from whom there is no escape.
So listen next week when Escape brings you Robert Tallman's story, The King of Oahu. Stay tuned now for Night Watch, which follows immediately over most of these stations. America listens most to the CBS Radio Network.
That is Escape with Two and Two Make Four, starring Tudor Owen. From August 21st, 1954. Hope you enjoyed that. Let's take a break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
Back to WGN Radio Theater with Earl Amari and Lisa Wolf.
Thanks, Roger, and thank you, Esmeralda. It is 12:07. It is officially Memorial Day. Happy Memorial Day, everyone. And in this hour, we're going to tune in to the Charlie McCarthy Show from 1953. Special guests Robert Cummings and Bunny Bishop. And then in our next hour, we're going to tune in to the New Adventures of Michael Shane, starring Jeff Chandler. And it's all brought to you by Cat's Pride. So let's play our game. Cat's Pride, Crack the Quote. What's
all
the
right,
movie?
The movie is The Great Escape from 1963.
Excellent.
Good. All and right. The prize we are going to give away, again, a Never Measure.
I want one of those.
I just got one.
I know. Why
I'm
did
not
you snag
share.
It? Well, Lisa, you know, they gave us a Never Measure.
No, they did not give it to us.
Snagged it.
To be clear, I got the email from Sarah, and she asked me if I would like one, and then she put my name on it and left it in my mailbox. So it wasn't really for us.
I want one.
It is a really cool device. I haven't had a chance to, but I played with it a little
bit.
Sure,
make me feel worse about not having one.
Yeah, well, you know, you can come over and
rub
hang
it
some
in a little
for
more,
me.
Lisa.
We're going to give it away. I'll talk a little bit more about it to the winner when they win.
All right, 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. We'll take the fifth caller. Call us now. Play the game with us live on the air. We'll be right back.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
We have Kathy on the line. Hi, Kathy.
Greetings.
Nice to hear from you. You want to play a little Crack the Quote with us?
Sure.
All right. We'll even let Roger play. What do you think of that?
I think that's a great idea.
Has Roger ever gotten one right?
I think once.
Okay. Well, but twice, maybe.
I think maybe once. Twice. But you know what? He's got a bright orange shirt on. I feel like it's his lucky shirt somehow. Is it a lucky shirt?
Well, I washed it. It must be lucky.
Okay. It's lucky because it went in the washing machine. Well, this week, I don't care. But next week, when you come sit on my lap, you gotta keep clean for me.
I will.
Okay.
I will do that.
Number one, the fellows wanted to put up a welcome committee for you, but that's for later. Number two, you can thank me now. Go ahead. Number three, hey, it's okay. It's okay. You're welcome.
Oh, boy.
Uh-huh. Oh, boy.
What do you think?
Not making it easy.
No, I know. It's my specialty.
Let's see. How about I just pick number two?
Number two. You can thank me now. Go ahead. Roger, do you like that one? Or
no,
you like something
number
else?
One.
You like one? The fellas want to put up a welcome committee for you?
Yeah. I'm gonna agree with Roger.
Two number ones?
I want to switch to one.
Okay, let's go with number one. Ashley, let's hear
the
it.
The fellas wanted to put up a welcome committee for you, but that's for later.
And we all got it right. Hey, we all picked number one.
Wow.
Wow, Roger, impressive. Kathy, great job. You know, we are so excited about Never Measure. You can easily center, level, hang your wall decorations really fast, and it eliminates the need to use measuring tape. You don't have to calculate. Carl's terrible with fractions. This is veteran-owned and made in the USA. You can check it out at nevermeasure.com. I just got mine. It's a really exciting device. You can measure and level, and it's got all sorts of placement capabilities. You'll get it. You're going to love it.
Yay. Well, thank you, guys.
Well, thank you for playing the game.
Since I'm so bad at fractions, your paycheck's going to be a fraction this week.
No problem, because nothing from nothing leaves nothing.
Hey, we're a trio. We're something. Singing.
Good. If you want to be with me. Oh, it's scary.
All right. Well, it's time for the Charlie McCarthy Show. You know, Roger, she loves ventriloquism.
I am so intrigued, not only with ventriloquism, which I am, and of course I had my own Charlie McCarthy doll as a kid, ventriloquist doll, but how this worked on the radio is beyond me.
Yeah.
So who would have thought?
She really never graduated away from it. She's still working with a dummy.
I didn't say it.
One day away, he's on a roll.
Exactly.
I had some rest.
He had some rest, and he had a bath, and he's ready to go.
I had a, I started my bath on Thursday, and I finished it this morning.
He's a little pruned up, but I didn't notice.
That's why I couldn't be here yesterday, because of this bath.
He's a little wrinkled up.
I was worried to bring the microphone and the equipment into the bathroom, because you can't do that with water around, so you can get electrocuted.
It would be a shocking experience.
All right, it's time now for the Charlie McCarthy Show. Special guests, Robert Cummings and Bunny Bishop. Let's go back to March 2nd, 1953, part one of the Charlie McCarthy Show.
Richard Hudnut of Fifth Avenue.
Richard Hudnut of Fifth Avenue brings you the Edgar Bergen Show with Charlie McCarthy. It's Sunday night and time again for Edgar Bergen with Charlie McCarthy, Mortimer Snerd, and Ray Noble and his orchestra. Brought to you, transcribed by Richard Hudnut, makers of scientific hair preparations. Tonight our guests are Bunny Bishop and Robert Cummings. And now, here is Edgar Bergen with Charlie McCarthy.
Oh, woe is me. Oh, woe is me. I'm going to end it all. I'm going to jump into a vat of hand lotion and soften myself to death.
Charlie, it sounds like woman trouble again.
It is, Thurgan, it is. Once more, I've thrown snake eyes in the crap game of love.
Yeah. Well, who is it this time?
Well, it's that cute little blonde next door.
That one?
Yeah. She lit the flame in my heart and ran when the fire got too hot. Yeah. Suffer.
Poor Charlie.
Yeah.
Poor Charlie.
Yeah, just sympathize. Don't overdo it, bud. No.
She led you on and then sort of discarded you.
Yeah, she trunned me away. Yeah. She tossed me aside like an old shoe with my tongue hanging out.
Yeah.
Why, I shall never know. I took her out. I bubblegummed and popcorned her.
Yeah.
And then I caught another fella kissing her.
Oh, yeah. That hardly sounds fair. No, you're darn right it does. No. I shake the tree and some other guy picks up the apples. I don't like that.
Well, it is confusing. How long did you know this girl?
Well, gee whiz. This afternoon it'll be one day.
One day, I see that's your trouble, Charlie. You were rushing things again. Romance must be allowed to blossom slowly.
Must it really?
Yes, yes. Like a buttercup unfolding its petals to the sun.
That's the Bergen method.
Yeah.
By the time he's tuckered, the girl is married and has seven kids.
Oh. Remember, the race is not always to the swift. A moral that is very well exemplified in one of Aesop's fables. It's the story of the hare.
And how you lost it.
No.
I may be heartbroken, but I couldn't let that one go by.
Yeah. It's the hare and the tortoise. Now, this hare was so swift that whenever he wanted to go anyplace, he'd have to start late to get there on time, you see.
Yeah.
Well, I shall continue.
You might as well.
Yeah.
There is nothing to wait for, buddy. No.
I shall continue.
Yeah, just tell it. Don't louse it up. No, all right.
Now, one day, this hare braggingly challenged all of the other animals to a race. And to his surprise, the tortoise accepted the challenge. Why, you're nothing but a slowpoke, the hare said.
Yeah.
Nothing but a slowpoke. Why, you'll never get anywhere.
Yeah, well, you won't either with that kind of acting.
I'm not so slow, said the tortoise. I can run faster than you think. And what do you think the rabbit said?
What's up, Doc?
No. No, the race is about to start.
Yeah, well, I got time to place a bet, have I? Where's a 10-cent window?
All right. They're at the starting line.
I'm betting on the rabbit.
All right, please. Yeah. The starting gun sounds, and the hare is off like a flash.
Whoosh! Oh, please.
All right. The hare looked back and couldn't even see the tortoise, and so he decided to take a nap.
He's saving himself for the home stretch. I'm not going to worry. I'm still betting on him.
Yeah. The turtle was gradually gaining ground, but the hare slept on and on, just kept on sleeping.
Well, he can't do this to me. Hey, wake up, you. Hit the road, you bum.
All right. Still the rabbit slept.
Somebody doped his carrots.
No. The rabbit woke up just in time to see the tortoise nearing the finish line. So he raced madly after the tortoise.
Hooray, we're still in the money.
Yeah, but it was too late.
Oh, nuts, it is?
Yeah. The tortoise crossed the finish line first and was judged the winner.
I demand a recount. Kill the umpire, we was robbed.
All right. Now, Charlie, what is the moral of this story?
Well, I would say it was this, Bergen, old boy. It is simply this. It is better to suffer in silence, or Bergen will tell you a story.
Oh, no. Here's a little present left over from our Operation Santa Claus. The charming young lady who supplied the songs as part of the show during our tour to the hospitals throughout the country. I'm sure you'll enjoy her singing as much as our boys did. Ladies and gentlemen, Miss Bunny Bishop singing, Don't Let the Stars Get in Your Eyes.
Don't let the stars get in your eyes. Don't let the moon break your heart. At night, in daylight it dies. Don't let the stars get in your eyes. Oh, keep your heart from me, for someday I'll return, and you know you're the only one I'll ever love. Too many nights, too many stars, too many moons could change your mind. Oh, I'm gone too long. Don't forget where you belong. When the stars come out, remember you are mine.
Don't let the stars get in your eyes. Don't let the moon break your heart.
No, love blooms at night. In daylight it dies. Don't let the stars get in your eyes.
Oh, keep your heart for me, for someday I'll return, and you know you're the only one I'll ever love.
Too many miles.
many months.
Too many days,
too many nights to be alone.
Please keep your heart while we are apart. Don't linger in the moonlight while I'm gone.
Don't let the stars get in them. Don't let the moon get in them.
Love blooms at night. In daylight it dies. Don't let the stars get in your eyes. Oh, keep your heart from me, for someday I'll return. And you know you're the only one I'll ever love.
I'll ever love.
I'll ever love.
I'll ever love.
Don't let the stars get in your eyes.
Hello, Mortimer. Well, after Charlie's unhappy face, it's good to see someone who's smiling.
Yeah, that's right. Of course, I gotta smile. That's the way my teeth are set in there, you know.
But you are happy, aren't you?
Yes, sirree. Well, especially today. See, my cow, Bessie, just had a blessed event.
The stork has visited Bessie.
Yeah, that's right. Not only that, he made two trips. Oh, two trips.
You mean twins.
Yeah. Two little cow slips.
Cow slips.
They look so much apart, I can't tell them alike.
Are they boys or girls?
Well, they come assorted. Assorted, yeah. One of the little fellas is a cowlet, and the other one is a bullet, I guess. Don't sound right, does it?
No. You mean one's a boy and the other's a girl?
How was that?
I say one is a boy and the other's a girl.
No, I think it's the other way around. The other way around. It's kind of confusing.
It is?
I don't know whether to paint the barn blue or pink. No.
Are these little calves healthy and getting strong?
Yeah, they was when I left them. Yeah. They was having a tug of war.
A tug of war?
Yeah. Yeah. Bessie was in the middle, of course. Yeah.
Well, Mortimer, it's pretty obvious that you like to be around animals.
Oh, yeah, I like them, yeah. Yeah, that's why it took me an extra job in the circus. I'm watering elephants.
Elephants, yeah. You're an elephant boy?
No, I wouldn't say that, no. My nose is just naturally kind of long. Well, I wouldn't say that, though. No, you can stop your tittering out there. You ain't no beauty, you know. All right.
Your job is to carry water to the elephants.
It is?
Well, isn't it?
Well, no wonder I'm tired, yeah. I've been carrying the elephants to the water.
Then it simply couldn't have been elephants.
No.
I'll bet you don't even know what an elephant looks like.
Oh, I sure do. An elephant is a... Well, you can tell them because... on one end, they're... Well, of course, it's on the other end, too, though. But you can tell them because they're kind of... Well, in a kind of... all around, No, that's a caterpillar. That's a caterpillar.
An elephant is a gigantic mammal whose upper incisors are elongated into tusks and is scientifically referred to as a pachyderm.
No.
Do you know what elephant tusks are made of?
Well, let's see now. I got it in my head here. Can't think of it right now.
No, well, you see, what are those two long white things that stick out of an elephant's trunk?
His winter underwear?
No. Those are the tusks.
Is that so?
Yes. Now, you see, elephants keep cool by fanning themselves with their ears.
Yeah, I've heard that, too, but it don't work. It don't work at all.
How do you know?
I tried it. Oh, you tried it.
Mortimer, how can you be so stupid?
Well, it just seems to go hand in hand with being dumb. I guess.
That's the first portion of the Charlie McCarthy Show from 1953. We'll have more of that after these words.
Well, kudos to Ashley for choosing her music.
Love it.
Fits perfectly with the genre of our show.
I think the other song she picked was Moonlight Serenade, and I said Begin the Begin.
Yeah, I looked at you like you were wrong, but I said nothing.
Yeah, like you knew I was wrong?
I did.
Yeah, sure you did.
I always know when you're wrong. I usually call you on it. I didn't argue with you when you discussed Memorial Day earlier either, but I knew you were wrong.
I know Memorial Day means you remember the departed.
Right.
You know, I understand
that. There's just a difference between Memorial Day and Veterans Day.
But they're all those people that passed away serving this country. We're veterans.
Right, but that's not what she said.
I know. But, Veterans Day is to honor veterans, and Memorial Day is to honor those who gave the ultimate sacrifice. And today is that day.
Yes,
so,
it is.
So we need to honor those people and thank those people for keeping us safe here in the United States of America. All right, we're listening to the Charlie McCarthy Show. Let's go back to March 1st, 1953. For guests Robert Cummings and Bunny Bishop on the Edgar Bergen Show with Charlie McCarthy.
Oh, Charlie, I left some mail on the piano. Did you see it?
No, Bill. No, I didn't. No, I'm too busy suffering.
Oh?
You see, nothing interests me anymore. Letters especially. I wouldn't be interested.
Oh, but Charlie, this was from a lady.
Oh, that's the worst kind. I wouldn't care.
It was in a blue envelope and it smelled wonderful.
Must have had cream rinse on it, eh?
Oh, no, Charlie. That letter was important.
Oh, sure.
It was a fan letter for our home permanent. Mm. And the girl who wrote it tried lots of home ways before she tried a Richard Hudnut.
Silly girl.
And she even tried skipping the neutralizing step.
How careless can you be?
Oh, but she found out that Richard Hudnut is the safe, sure way.
Good for her.
She says she's never been so pleased with a home permanent before. That's what lots of women say. Because shortcut methods like skipping the neutralizing step often lead to hidden hair damage. But a Richard Hudnut Home Permanent safeguards your hair with a neutralizer plus neutralizer booster. So Richard Hudnut always gives you soft, natural-looking curls that are so strong they stay in even in rainy weather.
Say, this Baldwin is quite a conversationalist, isn't he?
Well, Charlie, maybe I don't know how to wisecrack, but there's one thing I do know.
Yeah, you're right, Baldwin. You sure know who the sponsor is, don't you?
And I know that no other method, only Richard Hudnut, Charlie, can guarantee softer, stronger, more natural-looking curls in a shorter time.
Mm.
Next time, ladies, be beauty-wise and neutralize. Try a Richard Hudnut Home Permanent.
Please, Bill, that's enough talk about women.
Oh?
I'm trying to forget them. And I'm suffering, too.
Oh, really?
I think I'll run away, and I think I'll join the French Folies Bergère. That's what I'll do.
Charlie, you mean the French Foreign Legion.
You forget your women your way, and I'll forget them my way. Oh, woe is me, my little old heart. It's just breaking all up.
Oh, poor Charlie. I know how you feel.
Do you, Thurgood?
Oh, yes. It may not show, but love has also kicked me in the face.
Brother, it shows.
Bob Cummings. He didn't know.
Bob, I've got an announcement to make.
Yeah?
I'm through with women. Women are the cause of all the trouble in this whole world. Women are the downfall of man. Women are our ruination.
Charlie, please, Bob is married.
Edgar, just let the boy talk.
You see, Robert, don't tell me to see if matrimony has washed you up with the tide.
Well, no, Charlie. You see, Mary and I are very happy. Of course, once in a while we have a little argument, you know.
You see.
Last week. She wanted a mink coat and I wanted a car, so we compromised.
Compromised?
Yeah, we bought a mink coat, but we keep it in the garage.
Bob, my lad, I can see you've had it. Women have made this world an unfit place to live in, unless you're a woman.
Now, wait a minute, Chuck. I think that's going too far.
Is that all?
Now, Charlie, you shouldn't complain. The world's not a bad old place. And most of our troubles will disappear if you'll look them right in the face. Except for just one thing. I'm sure we'd get along nicely.
We know what you mean. Women.
Precisely.
Women, 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 women. That's your trouble right there. Women, women, women.
Now take King Solomon, you've heard of in history. In all the world, you'd never find a wiser man than he. But then he built a harem, and Solomon met his match.
We know what you mean. Women.
Why, Natch?
Women, 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 women. That's your trouble right there. Women, women, women.
So, Charlie, here's the story of two fellas that I know. Two sourdoughs in Alaska where the land is covered with snow. They were the very best of friends and always saw eye to eye until one day they quarreled. Had you guessed the reason why?
Women?
What else?
And so we take you to Alaska, to the loneliest place we can find, where men are men and there's nothing else but men for the women. Yes, the women, all the women have stayed behind.
Alaska Sam, I don't know how much longer we can take it. It's 30 below and all we've had for food is frozen fish, frozen fish.
Why, it's so cold that last batch of frozen fish hasn't thawed out yet.
Yeah, and we ate it 3 days ago.
Well, we got to do something about this food. I'm going to speak to our Chinese cook. Oh, Fu Yong, Fu Yong.
I come here very quick, chop chop. And all that sort of rot, you know.
Fu Young, how come only chow around here is frozen fish?
Well, Fu Young not able to cook because of accident, old chap. Me dropped big piece of whale fat on foot.
Blubber?
Well, I cried a little, Oh, Fu Young make joke.
Yeah, egg Fu Young.
Me have idea. If you want good cook, why not send for woman and marry her?
Send for a woman?
Yeah.
Say, that's a good idea. Maybe we could order one out of this here Sears Aeroba catalog here.
Hey, Klondike, you know, I never seen a woman. Yeah. What do they look like?
Oh, come on. Let's look through the catalog and try and find one. 53 models ought to be out now.
Yeah. Say, is that a woman?
No, that's a frying pan.
Hey, that looks interesting. Is that a woman?
No, that's a tea kettle. Yeah. Now, there, that's a woman there.
Oh, see. Maybe we better order the tea kettle.
What's wrong with a woman?
Well, I want to have fun. I want something to whistle back at me.
Me have nice picture of woman. Just received new calendar from Eskimo Bank.
Yeah, well, let's see that calendar. Wow.
Hey.
Look at that picture of January. A gorgeous girl wearing a skimpy ski suit.
Yeah. Hey, Klondike, look at February.
Yeah.
Boy, she took off her gloves and her cap.
Yeah.
Hey, and look at March.
Yeah.
She took off her muffler and her jacket.
Come on. Let's get to April. Why, the double crossers. Three kids fishing in a rowboat.
Well, Klondike, it's been a month since we sent away for that woman. You think one ought to be here soon?
No, it'll take longer than that. You see, they got, must be the mailman with some more catalogs. Well, it's too cold to open the door. Hey, whatever you got there slipping under the door.
It was a tight squeeze, but I made it.
Holy smoke, I thought the cold killed that kind of thing.
The mail order
Water Company sent me.
I knew it. They shipped us the frying pan.
No, it's the rake. I can tell by the teeth.
I'm a woman. Uh-huh. Can't you tell by my shape?
Must have been damaged in the shipping.
Now, don't be smart. Who sent for me? Now, which one is going to marry me?
Yeah, well, I'm already married. Yeah. In fact, I got a wife in Nome, and I got another one in Fairbanks.
Oh, how could you do a thing like that?
Fast dog team.
I just got to find a man. Oh, look out that window. I see him, my dream man. Oh, look, he's rich. He's wearing a fur coat, and he's got the cutest mustache.
No, that's a walrus.
I don't care. I'm going to marry him anyway.
You can't marry a walrus.
Now, look, you know it, and I know it, but the walrus doesn't.
Well, we did it, Klondike. We got rid of her. I'm sure glad. I was kind of worried there. I thought a woman was going to break up our friendship.
Yeah. Oh, I tell you, Alaska, nothing, and I don't mean nothing, can ever break up our friendship. Old partner, old pal.
Hello, boys. My name is Marie. I am from Hudson Bay.
Oh. Love that coastline.
The mail order firm sent me.
Oh, thank goodness this one wasn't damaged in shipping. Huh?
Now, which one of you two men is going to marry me, huh?
The handsome one, baby, and just happens to turn out it is me. Give me a kiss, Marie, if that's okay with you, Alaska.
Yeah, this woman's come so far, I guess she deserves a kiss.
Oh, she does.
I want to show you that I'm your partner. You can kiss her.
Well, so now I'm your partner, too, you know. You kiss her.
No, you kiss her.
No, you kiss her.
Okay, I'll kiss her.
Now, wait a minute. Back up that bus. I think we went past my stop here.
You know, I like you, Dimples. I think I will marry you. My hero.
You're on television Saturday night starring Bob Cumming.
Quite a sneak. But you can't marry her, Alaska, and break up our friendship.
Oh, what can I do?
Well,
I'm torn between my friendship for a man and the love for a woman.
Uh-huh.
Consumed with the desire to clasp Maria in my arms. Oh, what to do? What?
Go back to television. You have to see this to believe it, really.
Now, don't you worry about him, Sherry. You and I can be so happy together.
Oh, that's right. An igloo for two.
Uh-huh.
Where we'll live like the Eskimos do.
Oh, chérie.
Life will be a grand sweet song. Did you know the nights are 6 months long up there?
Oh, la la.
An igloo for two. Where we'll learn to bill and to coo.
Uh-huh.
Now I'll kiss you once.
Ooh.
I'll kiss you twice.
Ooh.
You'll be the only girl I ever kept on ice.
Uh-huh.
I'll be happy in an igloo. Igloo. You too. Quatre visiteurs viennent passer la soirée avec la famille.
Oh, charmant, you ma'am. Silly girl. Boy.
Tout sweet.
An igloo for two. Where we live like the Eskimos
Ooh,
do.
Can't wait. Mm.
Life will be a grand sweet song.
Yeah.
Did you know the nights are 6 months
Ooh,
long?
Wow, we melt that
an
ice.
An igloo for two. Where we learn how to bill and coo.
I'll pan for gold and I'll strike it rich.
Well, I'll throw my costume jewelry in the nearest ditch.
We'll be happy in an igloo.
Just made for two. Come, chérie.
Well, so long, Klondike. I told you, I warned you that a woman would break up our friendship.
Yeah, I got no buddy, no girl, nothing. Not even a dog from a sled.
I made it again. Here I am.
Well, you'll do mush.
have a good time in Alaska. A-L-A-S-K-A. You'll have a good time in Alaska. A-L-A-S-K-A. Where men are men and gals are gals. And then there's the Eskimo. So leave neurotics to the tropics. Don't mix sand with snow. You'll have a good time in Alaska. A-L-A-S-K-A. Don't waste your time playing canasta. Here's the place to play. Whether you come from Lincoln, Nebraska, or faraway places like Madagascar, you ain't seen nothing till you've seen Alaska.
A-L-A-S-K-A. You'll have a hot time and a barbecue stinky in A-L-A-S-K-A.
I would like to thank Robert Cummings for being with us tonight. Until next Sunday, then. Good night, everyone.
Remember to listen to Edgar Bergen with Charlie McCarthy, Mortimer Sturt, Ray Noble, and the entire ensemble, brought to you by Richard Hudnut of Fifth Avenue, every Sunday over the CBS radio network at the same time. Tonight's Edgar Bergen Show with Elvia Allman and Viola Vaughn was produced and transcribed in Hollywood by Sam Pierce. This is Bill Baldwin speaking.
There was Bill Baldwin doing the announcing on that. Do you think that's Alec Baldwin's dad?
No, I don't.
Probably not, right?
I just don't.
Maybe one of the Baldwin brothers?
Doubtfully so.
Probably not.
Yeah.
That is the Edgar Bergen Show with Charlie McCarthy from March 1st, 1953. Guests Robert Cummings and Bunny Bishop. Hope you enjoyed that. It was on the CBS Radio Network, sponsored by Richard Hudnut. Remember that furniture? Richard Hudnut furniture? I do.
No, I don't.
Yeah, well.
Do you have any Richard Hudnut furniture in your home?
I don't think I do.
No.
No. But they had very fine furniture.
I bet they did.
In their day. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater.
It's time now for Crack the Quote, brought to you by Cat's Pride.
We have a caller. It is Jimbery on the phone. Hey, how are you?
Well, I'm just fine. How are you?
I'm great. Did I get your name right?
Yes, Kimberly. Mm-hmm.
Oh, great. So the movie is Chinatown. You ready to do it?
I'm ready.
All right. Carl, you ready for the challenge?
Yes.
All right. Here we go. Number one. No other treatments have been uncovered to advance lung function. Number two, the coroner's report states that his lungs were full of water and his brain shut the body down. Number three, the coroner's report proves that he had salt water in his lungs when he was killed.
I'll take number two.
Like number two.
Hmm.
Uh-huh.
Carl? He's vacillating over here. Which is a, you know, kind of a big word for him.
let me see how many syllables that
four.
Is. Vacillating.
It's vacillating, but you were so close.
Vacillating?
Do you know how to spell it?
It starts with a V.
That's perfect. That's
yeah,
good enough.
That's all I need to
me.
Know.
Yeah.
Like. I want to make sure I'm saying this young lady's name right. Is it Kimberly or Jimbery?
No, with a K. Kimberly.
Kimberly.
It's Kimberly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Got it.
Okay, Kimberly. So let me think. You picked number three, right?
I picked two.
She picked number two. The coroner's report states that his lungs were full of water and his brain shut the body down. Carl.
No, I don't think it's that
one. Don't like that one? Okay.
No, I'm going to say three.
Number three. The coroner's report proves that he had salt water in his lungs when he was killed.
Yeah.
That's the one you
I'm
like?
Go with number three.
All right, let's hear it.
The coroner's report proves that he had salt water in his lungs when he was killed.
Well, Carl got you on this
one. And I got all three of them right tonight.
You did, but you know what? Kimberly, it matters not because he's not the winner. You are. You have won the desktop indoor weather station. It is brought to you by American Weathermakers Heating and
Cooling.
Frog
in your throat?
No, yeah, frog.
Ribbit. Lisa had a frog in her throat.
Ribbit. No frogs here. They are the 60-Minute Men. You can call 855-955-HVAC. It's really cool. Everybody loves these. I hope you enjoy it.
Way to go, Kimberly.
Hey, thank you.
Thank you. Okay, goodbye, Kimberly. Thank you for playing the game. Lisa,
right,
what happened? Lisa swallowed and went down the wrong side of her throat or something like that, right? What happened, Lisa?
Nothing. I'm good, Carl.
You all right?
I'm perfect.
Are you okay? Are you going to be all right, Lisa?
I am good, Carl.
All right. Do you need a pat on the back? One of those?
Well, I do like a pat on the back every so often, but okay. Not because of that.
Okay.
Everybody needs a pat on the back every
this
once
is
in a while.
True. This is true. Well, it is time for the new adventures of Michael Shane. This is going to be a lot of fun, this show, because Jeff Chandler does a great job as the tough private eye. He was like a redheaded Irish detective, and he was working out of Miami, and this was created by Brett Halliday. Good series, and there were movies and TV show too, but this is the radio show. Let's go back to October 26th, 1949, the gray-eyed blonde. Here's Jeff Chandler in the new adventures of Michael Shane.
I eased into the alley and waited. Pretty soon, a side door opened, and out came Helen. Just as I got to her, I heard a noise behind me. I started to turn around, but too late. A king-sized comet exploded over my right ear, and the ground came up and hit me in the face.
The New Adventures of Michael Shane, Private Detective. This is your director, Bill Russo, inviting you to listen to Michael Shane, that reckless, red-headed Irishman, back at his old haunts in New Orleans, in another transcribed episode. We call it The Case of the Gray-Eyed Blonde.
Maybe Trinidad. Yep. Men. Yeah, where's that folder on the Virgin Islands? Yeah. Here. Yep. Come in. And then maybe Havana on the way back. Sloppy Joes, girls, and. Well. Hello.
Michael Shane?
Mm-hmm.
Hello, Mike.
Hello?
Helen.
Helen. Sit down.
Thanks. From the looks of all those travel folders on your desk, I'd say you were planning a trip.
No, just taking a poor man's vacation.
Reading travel folders? Well, probably almost as much fun as actually taking the trips.
I doubt it.
Is something the matter?
Matter?
You've been looking at me sort of...
I've never seen gray eyes like that before.
Oh.
Make quite a dent. Gray eyes, red lips... You, come to talk about trips?
In a way. Short ones.
Uh-huh. Cigarette?
Thanks. Well, I have a match.
Thanks. Trips?
Yeah. You run errands, Mike?
Errands? Friends, what kind?
Well, I made a mistake quite a while ago, Mike. Big mistake. I've been paying for it ever since. Regularly.
Blackmail.
Mm-hmm. One more payment, the account's closed for good.
So?
So, I want you to make that last payment for me. Tonight.
Just for my own information, Helen, you're not by any chance asking me
I'm not asking you to kill anyone, Mike.
That's good to know.
No, this is all on the up and up. Here are two envelopes. The instructions are in this one.
Instructions?
Yeah, where and how you're to meet the man you're to meet.
Uh-huh.
When you do meet him, you hand him this other envelope. In return, he'll give you a small package. You bring that back to your office, I pick it up here.
How would I go about getting in touch with you if anything went wrong?
Well, I don't expect anything will, but in case of emergency, try my hotel. The Donna.
I just remembered a charge I might have to make in this particular case.
Oh, what is it?
It might be for you to have dinner with me or something.
Dinner or something might be arranged, Mike. You'll take the job?
Sure, why not?
I'll pay you $100. I'm sure you'll earn every penny of it.
Well,
Well, maybe it was those gray eyes of Helen's. I don't know. At the time, there was something awfully compelling about them. Plus everything else about her, from her honey-colored hair to her alligator sling pumps. Plus, of course, the fact that I'd just gotten my license reinstated a couple of weeks before, and that $100 she was offering looked like a lot of good living for a change. So when she asked me to take the job of making a blackmail payment for her, I said yes. After she left, I opened the instruction envelope and read them over carefully. They were so thorough, I knew whoever this guy was, he wanted to be awfully sure he had the right party. I arrived at the indicated corner of Barrack Street 10 minutes before midnight. 10 minutes early. The street was deserted except for a little red and white peanut wagon that a small olive-skinned gent was pushing down the street toward me. When he got to me, he stopped.
A peanut, senor?
No, thanks.
They are fresh, senor.
You're working kind of late, aren't you?
Si, senor. These peanuts, senor, they are the best.
Tell me, you seen anyone around here in the last 10 minutes? A man?
You are looking for someone?
Yeah, in a way.
Then perhaps while you wait, senor, some peanuts.
No, not now. Thanks. He gave me a very unhappy stare and then shrugged his shoulders and pushed his cart around the corner and out of sight. I started walking down the deserted street. My footsteps echoed on the pavement. It was darker than I thought it would be. No streetlights in this section. I kept trying to look over my shoulder, but I couldn't see anything. I knew that somewhere in that block, somebody was supposed to tap me on the shoulder, and I was wishing he'd hurry up and get it over. I was almost at the end of the block now. Still, nothing had happened. The building ahead of me on the corner was getting some work done on it. They had the front boarded up and had a boardwalk in place of the sidewalk. The street side of the boardwalk was boarded up, too. It was like a tunnel. I took a few steps into the pitch-black tunnel and stopped. Something started bothering me. For a moment, I couldn't figure out what it was, but then I got it. Somebody was in that boarded tunnel with me. Before I could do or say anything, a hand slid across my mouth, and I could feel the muzzle of an automatic against the side of my neck. Brilliant boy that I am, I got the idea that mum was a word. Then the hand left my mouth and slid down and started going through my pockets. Pretty soon, it came to the envelope I was supposed to deliver. It patted the envelope and slipped it back into my pocket. Well, that I didn't get at all. Then the gun pressed a little harder onto my neck. I suddenly knew that his finger was tightening on the trigger. I dove for the ground, the gun went off. Red-hot poker seared the top of my head, and then blackness. After what seemed like about a month, blackness started to fade. It faded still more, started turning to white. I knew I was in a hospital. Then I spotted some bars across the windows, and I got a strong hunch it was the receiving ward of the prison hospital. I tried to open my eyes more, which was pretty hard to do because my head at this point felt like two little men were playing ping pong with a hunk of hot lead. But I did manage to see someone bending over me. It was Police Inspector Lefebvre.
Not gonna die after all, hmm?
What odds could I get?
You were lucky. This got creased.
That's lucky, huh?
Looks like you had a little argument with your sidekick.
Pretty one-sided argument. But look, Inspector, maybe you wouldn't mind telling me what this is all about, huh?
That's funny, Shane. I was just going to ask you that.
Huh?
Mr. Graber, will you step in here now, please?
Yes, Inspector?
Mr. Graber, I want you to take a good look at this man. He the one?
I can't be sure. He might be.
It might be what? Look, I'm the one that got shot in the head, if that's...
Just a minute, Shane. I'm going to tell you something you might possibly already know.
At this point, what I know is just a drop in the bucket of what I don't know.
Mr. Frank Graber here is a vice president of the South Atlantic Exporting Syndicate. Ever hear of him?
Yeah, they ship to Cuba, South America, lots of places. I did some work for him last year.
Yeah, I know.
What's that got to do with...
Coming to that. Day before yesterday, there was an unusually large deposit to be made. So large that Mr. Graber here himself started out with it. Something like $60,000, wasn't it, Mr. Graber?
$62,000 in $1,000 bills.
Yeah. Well, Mr. Graber never... Suppose you tell him what happened, Graber.
Well, I went out the back door of the office building, and it wasn't until I opened my car door that I saw the man sitting inside. Had his hand up to the side of his face so that I couldn't get a clear look at it. But in the other hand was a gun. He forced me to drive down near the river, made me get out of the car and go into an abandoned warehouse. There he hit me over the head with his gun and took the money.
That's too bad. But outside of welcoming you to the Battered Heads Club, I still don't see
that
what...
That guy could have been you, Sheen.
What do you mean?
We found one of those $1,000 bills in an envelope. In your pocket.
About Ben, a lot of things started making sense. Why that guy in the dark wanted to be sure the envelope was in my pocket before he tried to kill me. Yeah, it looked like somebody was very interested in having me found dead with some of that robbery dough on me, thus getting me elected as chief suspect. But I knew it was going to be a tough story to sell the inspector. He ushered Graber out of the room and then came back and stood beside the bed, slowly shaking his head.
Oh, I don't get it, Shane. Not 3 weeks ago, you were telling everybody what a good boy you were going to be if you could just get your license back. So they give you your license back, so here you are, right in the middle of something that smells to high heaven.
Look, Inspector, I'm going to give it to you straight. It was a frame.
No sale, Shane.
Believe me, it's the truth. A girl named Helen...
Yeah.
Oh, I know it sounds phony, but it happened. She gave me a song and dance about hiring me to make a blackmail payment for her. But what she really wanted, she and her boyfriend, I guess, was to have me found dead with some of this dough on me, thereby taking the heat off.
I suppose you can back up your story by producing this girl.
I can try.
Still not buying.
Look, Inspector, I've always cooperated with you.
Yeah, well, that's the only reason I'm even listening to you.
So now I need a break, a big one. You can give it to me.
The only thing I can give you is time. And not much of that.
How much?
Well, my next way out.
I know that. You're not exactly alone, though.
Well, it's 7 a.m. I'll give you until 10 o'clock tonight. Huh?
Tonight? Have a heart. That doesn't give me...
I said 10 o'clock tonight.
Make it midnight, then.
10?
Okay, 10 o'clock tonight.
And Shane.
Yeah?
That's it. One way or another.
Funny thing about the inspector. He always meant just exactly what he said. So I had something like 15 hours to find one woman in a city as big as New Orleans. A beautiful woman with gray eyes who had almost done a very neat job of fitting me for a coffin. I lost two of those 15 hours getting part of my strength back and talking the doctor into giving me my pants. The only thing I had to go on was what Helen had told me about reaching her at the Hotel Donna. The desk clerk there remembered her just as soon as I mentioned the gray eyes.
Oh, yes, sure. Let's see. Helen Collier she was registered under. Not bad. No, not bad at all.
Was registered?
Yes, checked out first thing this morning. About 6, I guess it was.
No forwarding address, huh?
No, asked her, but she said none.
Well, thanks anyway.
Might ask one of the cab drivers out front.
Yeah, I'm going to. Thanks.
That's the first portion of the New Adventures of Michael Shane from a broadcast date of October 26, 1949, The Gray-Eyed Blonde, starring Jeff Chandler. And we will get back to this episode of Michael Shane after these words. Song came out the year you were born, Lisa.
This sure. Song came out in 1927, so it's right about that, yeah.
Yeah, pretty sure. Maybe it was the year after you were born.
No, it was right on. You were right on target, 1927, October.
Hey, you know what?
What?
Next week when we come back here,
yes,
some cool stuff.
Well, would we do anything other than cool stuff?
No, got some really great classic radio shows.
You love Gunsmoke. I know you
do. I love Gunsmoke. And then it's a two-part Dragnet. So it's an hour-long Dragnet.
Nice.
2 half-hours make up one story. They did that every once in a while on Dragnet, so we have one for our listeners next week. That's on Saturday. So Gunsmoke and then 2 episodes of Dragnet. What's on Sunday?
Sunday we have Richard Diamond, private detective. Mike loves the private detectives. We've got the Martin and Lewis show, which is always fun, and Screen Directors Playhouse.
Yep, so great lineup next week. Make sure you're here every Saturday and Sunday night. We are here from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m.
Well, I am. You're not always here.
Well, when I have to take a bath.
That's what I'm saying.
I can't broadcast when I'm bathing.
I know. I'm just saying I will take up the slack when I have to.
So make sure you're here every Saturday, Sunday night from 11 p.m. till 2 a.m. where we play all your favorite classic radio shows.
Right.
Right.
Nick DiGilio will not be in after us, as he usually is, but right. Steve Dale will be filling in, so you can look forward Steve to Dale. Steve Dale.
Oh, that'll be great. Hopefully he'll come in here. We'll do a little crosstalk together. Oh, that'll be fun. All right, well, let's get back now to the new adventures of Michael Shane.
Didn't take me long to find out that none of the three cab drivers in front of the Hotel Donna could have taken Helen, because none of them came on until 7. But I did get the address of the driver who worked nights there, and 10 minutes later I was pounding on his door.
What do you want?
Are you Joe, the cab driver?
Yeah, what?
You have a fare this morning about 6?
You woke me up to ask me that? Beat it.
Hey, come on, Joe. Open up.
Look it, friend. I don't know who you are, and it's just the way I want to keep it. Now, suppose you...
I'm not leaving until I get an answer from you. A girl about 5'4", gray eyes at the Hotel Donna. Where'd you take her?
I don't know what you're talking about now. Beat it.
Get your foot out of the door.
Okay, we'll go inside.
Hey, what's...
Now, look. The more you talk, the more I'm convinced you did take her somewhere. Now, open up. I've been through too much on account of that
tray. I don't know what you're talking about.
If you're trying to cover for her, you're making an awful big mistake, Joe. A mistake that could put you behind bars. She paid you to keep your mouth shut, huh? Okay, here's 10 to open it.
Look, from a friend. Be smart. Keep out of this deal.
It's too late, Joe. Here's the 10. Open up.
I got more than that for promise.
Look, I haven't got all day, and 10's all you get. Maybe that's too much. Maybe I could beat the answer out of you and save myself a 10 spot. Now, which is it going to be?
Okay.
All right, now, you picked her up at the Hotel Donna at 6 this morning.
Yeah.
Where'd you take her?
From a friend. Let me give you a tip. Don't hold your breath till you see her again.
What do you mean?
Where I took her was the airport.
It all started when a gray-eyed blonde named Helen hired me to make a blackmail payment for her. Only I found out too late it was a frame. I got shot in the head and woke up and found myself accused of a $62,000 robbery and was given just 15 hours by Police Inspector Lefevre to find Helen and clear myself. So far, all I'd found was she'd left the Hotel Donna at 6 that morning to go to the airport. Well, I was out there now talking to all the ticket clerks. Finally, I found one who remembered her.
Yes, surely. Those eyes of hers would be hard to forget.
Well, which plane did she leave on, you remember?
Let's see, New York? No, that wasn't it.
Come on, try to remember.
Now, wait a minute. Oh, I remember now.
Don't tell me it's that plane that's taking off out there.
No, she didn't leave at all.
What?
No, bought a ticket to Havana. Midnight plane. Tonight.
Well, at least I knew she was still in New Orleans. Of course, finding would be something else again. And then I got an idea, a long shot maybe. But right now, the welcome mat was out for anything that would pass for a starting point. I went back to the Hotel Donna and over to the desk clerk.
Yes?
You remember me? I was in here a couple of hours ago asking about that girl with...
With the gray eyes, yes. You really got it bad for her, huh?
Yeah.
Well, I'm sorry, but she hasn't come back, and I told you she didn't leave a forwarding address.
I know. Look, her room, has it been straightened up yet?
Well, probably not. Cleaning girl's a little slow. We're thinking of letting her go at the end.
How about letting me in the room for a look around?
Oh, now, wait a minute.
Why not?
You've got it bad for the girl, and that's tough, but we can't have you traipsing through that room looking for her forwarding address. It's, against the policy.
Whose?
Mine.
Uh-huh. Okay, I'll make a deal.
Deal?
Yeah. Now, here's a 5. Let's just say I'm engaging the room for a couple of hours as is.
Oh, well, now, why didn't you say so in the first place? Here, I'll get the key.
The only chance was that Helen wouldn't feel any reason to cover her tracks too carefully, since according to her plan, I was to have been long dead by now. I practically tore the room apart. Nothing. Then I thought of the wastebasket. There were 2 things in it, a piece of Kleenex with the imprint of a mouth and lipstick, and a torn half of a paper match folder. There was some printing on it. All I could make out were the first 2 letters, R.A., and below was the word cocktails, the name of a bar, and possibly, just possibly, a hangout of Helen's where she might be passing time and keeping undercover until that midnight plane to Havana. Oh, but which bar was it? How many of them started with R.A.? My guess was quite a few. But it didn't matter how many. I had to try all of them. I went back to my office. That was a mistake. I dropped into my chair and propped my feet up on the desk. That was a big mistake. I figured I'd just rest a few minutes before I started out. That was a bigger mistake. Closed my eyes. That was my biggest mistake. When I opened my eyes again, I thought something had gone wrong with him. Everything was dark. Then I looked at my watch and almost went right up through the ceiling. 7:10. I'd slept all afternoon. I had 3 hours left. I started out. The nearest bar on my list was a place with a quaint name of Rat Race. When I got there, things were already in high gear. I went in, and then I knew how the place got its name. The music was tailgating loud. And it all came from 5 guys in the corner. A few couples were dancing, I guess you'd call it, on a floor about 3 sizes larger than a phone booth. And the bartender sat at the end of the bar near the musicians reading a paper. I had a tough time making myself heard.
What'll it be, Mac?
You happen to know a girl
What's
named...
that?
I say to you...
Can't hear you.
A girl named Helen, gray eyes, 5'40", you know her?
Oh, yeah, lots of girls around. I don't know, I don't think so.
I suppose I've been asking too much to hit the jackpot on the first nickel.
Talk louder, will you?
Oh, skip it. Threaded my way through the dancers and the smoke and went out. 1 down, 8 to go. I checked the rat race off my list, went to a place called Rady's in a pretty seamy neighborhood. It was a lot darker than the rat race here and a lot quieter. Hospitable, too. I'd hardly gotten inside before a furnace-eyed brunette sidled up.
Hello.
Hello.
You looking for someone?
Yeah.
Here I am.
No, the girl I'm looking for is named Helen. Gray eyes.
Helen. What's wrong with my eyes? They're brown. Nice.
Yeah, so I see.
Like to dance? Have a drink?
Thanks, anyway. So I crossed off Rady's and kept going. And I kept drawing blanks. Rays, Ravicini's, radio room. And it got to be after 9, and I could practically feel the inspector's official and heavy hand on my shoulder. My head was throbbing again, and I was getting weaker by the minute. I guess I was none too steady as I walked down the street. And then as I passed a little red and white peanut wagon parked at the curb, an olive-skinned little gent darted out in front of me.
Senor.
You again.
Senor, is something wrong? You...
No, just tired.
Here, senor, have some of my nice peanuts. Nice, fresh peanuts.
Oh, thanks. You kind of get around town, don't you?
Si, but, senor, they're the most delicious peanuts. They will help...
I don't want any peanuts,
now. But I tell you, senor, they're fine peanuts. The best peanuts this side of Havana, senor.
Can't you understand it? What about Havana?
Senor, what have I done? What have I said to offend? Please don't let me go.
What'd you say about Havana?
Nothing, senor. Nothing. It's just a place where I was born, senor. Havana, my home. That is all, senor.
You know anything about that midnight plane to Havana tonight?
No, senor. I swear it. I know nothing about the midnight plane to Havana, except I would like to be on it.
Okay. I let go of him, and he darted around to the other side of his wagon. I staggered on down the street. I still wasn't sure whether he'd been trying to tell me something or not. I didn't have time to figure it out. I had to keep going. Then I went to Raymond's, the next place on the list. It was a small place, no music. Only a couple of people at the bar, and the bartender was watching me very carefully. Hello.
What can I do for you?
Do you happen to know a girl named Helen, gray eyes?
No. Uh-huh.
I see. But you happen to have a light on you?
Light? Yeah.
Thanks. Thanks a lot. I walked back to the door and went out. I was trying hard not to tremble, because the trail had gotten hot, very hot. That bartender had been just a little too quick to say he didn't know Helen. If I needed any more proof, he'd given it to me. The matchbook he'd used to give me a light was the same kind as a fragment I was carrying in my pocket. Yeah, I knew I'd finally found the place. I went around the corner, eased into the alley, and waited. Pretty soon, a side door opened, and out came Helen. Hey, wait a minute.
Well, hello, Mike. You really shouldn't have, you know.
Found you?
Mm-hmm. Better look behind you.
Oh, no. That's too old a gag to... I guess the business of one thing canceling out another is true. That hit on the head sort of blotted out the throbbing of the wound. When I came to and found myself lying on the floor in a little room, my head was a lot better than I figured. Numb, I guess. I could hear voices.
Oh,
two of them.
Stupid things to do. I told you.
And suddenly they began registering.
I couldn't help it, Helen. I had to see you. Well, it's a good thing I did, too. Shane was almost ready to grab you when I hit him just now.
Oh, you're falling away. Why didn't you finish the job last night when you had him on the board?
I tried to.
Wait a minute, Helen. He's coming to.
Yeah, I've come to. So, trustworthy vice president, Mr. Frank Graber, is the big boy of the deal.
Now, you shut up, Shane.
I might get an argument as to who the brains really was, Mike, but it doesn't matter now.
Pretty neat. Graber walks off with the money and tells the police a fairy tale about being robbed. Then the two of you nominate me for the fall guy. Graber's supposed to kill me, so I'll be found with some of the dough and therefore become the chief suspect. Only Graber misses.
Figured it all out, didn't you, Mike? Well, Frank, I guess there's only one thing to do.
Yes.
And I knew what that one thing was. I knew I had to think fast and act fast to prevent that one thing from happening. If I could just divert their attention from me long enough for a dive at the window or door. And then I thought of something. Something that might possibly take their minds off me for just a second.
Come on, Frank, get it over with.
I suppose you've told Graber about that plane ticket, Helen.
What?
To Havana on the midnight plane.
What ticket?
Why, he doesn't know what he's saying,
No, wait. What ticket?
Don't you see? He's just trying to upset
you. You bought a ticket on the midnight plane to Havana.
Frank, I didn't...
You were going to run out on me.
Oh, don't be silly.
You're going to take all that money and run out on
me. That's not true. I told you I wasn't.
I guess I knew all along, Helen. Only I just wouldn't face it. But I guess I knew all along.
What are you talking about?
I knew. All the time you were telling me you loved me. Now, we'd wait until the heat was off, and then I'd retire on account of ill health, and we'd take the money and go to South America and have a wonderful time.
Frank,
all the time you were telling me those things, I knew you didn't mean them. I knew it. I wanted to believe it.
You're all wrong.
You kept working on me. You finally got me to do this thing. Because you were like a disease. Frank, you were in my blood. Now you are going to run out on me. But I won't let you.
No, Frank, that's not true.
It's too bad.
No...
You won't get to use that ticket. Helen, my darling.
Frank.
Suddenly, there was a gun in his hand. It was pointed at Helen, and I could see she didn't believe it, but I did. I dove at him, and just as I hit him, the gun went... Helen slowly sagged to the floor. I got hold of his wrist, but I was off balance, and he was bringing the gun slowly around toward me, and then, just as it got to me, I twisted as hard as I could, and we both went down, and the gun went off again. Then the gun... dropped out of his hand. Just sort of crumpled over and lay still. I stared hard at the widening red stain on his coat. Right over his heart. Well, I got a call through to the inspector right away, and he sort of took over from there. And that was just about that. With all the loose ends tied up one way or another. Oh, yeah, except one, that plane ticket to Havana, the one Helen had bought. Nobody seemed to know quite what to do with it, because she'd bought it with her own money instead of the robbery dough. Of course, I had an idea what to do with it, but, well, I gave it up after a while. I guess the little peanut vendor needed it more than I did. Of course, I didn't just give it to him. It was strictly a business deal. Now, I traded him the ticket for his peanut wagon. So now, if the detective business ever gets too tough, well, I've always got a sideline.
This is your director, Bill Russo, again. Our story is based on characters created by Brett Halliday. The music is composed and conducted by John Duffy, and Michael Shane is portrayed by Jeff Chandler. The New Adventures of Michael Shane is a Don W. Sharp production, transcribed in Hollywood and distributed exclusively by the Broadcasters Guild. Next week, you'll hear Michael Shane in another thrilling adventure from mysterious and colorful New Orleans.
When you were going to Tulane in New Orleans, Lisa, did you run into Jeff Chandler or Michael Shane at all? Because this is where he operated, out of New Orleans.
You know, I didn't, which is really a shame.
Really?
Yeah, it's a shame. Had I known they were there, I would have sought them out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that was The Gray-Eyed Blonde on The New Adventures of Michael Shane, October 26, 1949. Hope you enjoyed it. Let's take a quick break. Then it's more of the WGN Radio Theater. Yeah, well, you know what, Lisa?
What, Carl?
We're done.
Yes.
And we're going to have some really warm weather tomorrow, which is nice. I'm going to go to the pool.
What pool?
I'm going to the pool because, you know what?
No.
I didn't get enough water.
Okay.
Over the last,
go from the bath to the
three
pool.
Or 4 days. I'm going to do a little swimming tomorrow at the health club. I'm going to swim some laps tomorrow because it's going to be like 100.
That's like an indoor pool you're talking.
No, outside.
It's an outdoor pool at your health club?
Yeah, they have they have an outdoor pool.
You're
and
fancy.
An indoor pool.
You're
and
fancy.
I recently went to Lululemon because, you know, you tell me about
because
Lululemon.
Because you're fancy.
Lisa loves Lululemon, and she told me, you need to go to Lululemon and get a bathing suit from Lululemon.
I never mentioned my a bathing suit. I never mentioned that.
Well, you said you should check out Lululemon.
I may have said
and
that.
And I was saying, I need shorts and or a bathing suit. And you're like, they have them at Lululemon.
Is that
so
right?
So I went over there, and I got a
Did you buy something for me while you were there?
No, I didn't,
that's
actually.
So sad.
But
you could have.
I will next time,
okay,
though.
Okay, thank
you. I'll get you something there.
Okay, great.
So I got a bathing suit from Lululemon. I'm going to try it out tomorrow.
Okay, this I don't need
at
to hear.
At the pool.
This I don't want a picture
right,
either.
Right, Steve?
I don't know that
Look
I want to jump in on
Steve
this conversation.
I don't
ever shop at Lululemon. They have
My
good,
wife
they have
does.
Nice men's clothes there.
Okay.
They really do.
I'm sure they do.
They have some great men's clothing.
My wife and goes there, I know.
You know what? And what a nice, smooth transition this would be to talk to Steve Dale, who has just entered the studio. He's filling
it's
in
so
this
great
morning.
It's so great to
see you,
Steve.
Yeah, good
DiGilio.
Morning. Yeah, I'll have a great time filling in for Nick, first of all. I love what you guys do.
Oh,
I mean,
thank
I
thank you.
As
we,
you know,
love
I love
it.
I
love
just
what you
love
do.
Classic radio.
I know you do.
And you guys bring it to Chicago every week. So I love that. I have no idea what your basement looks like, though, with the vault of shows you must have down there.
It's tough to, you kind of got to tippy-toe around.
He doesn't have a basement, but if he did, it would be tough to tippy-toe around.
Well,
you know what?
I started this company in my parents' basement when I was a kid. And
I've
I had
to you about that.
All tapes and, you know, at that time it was reel-to-reel tapes.
What?
Reel-to-reel.
What are those? Well, I know what those are.
I know you know what they are.
Yeah, but people may not.
Yeah.
I mean, do you get depressed when people say...
cassette?
Or,
what's a cassette?
Yeah, like 8-track?
Yeah, or 8-track, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So I've got these old cassette
tapes. Well, I remember wire radio,
like,
wire recordings.
What?
The wire recordings.
Okay,
you know,
that
before,
really is before my
yeah,
time.
Yeah, that's definitely before
He's,
our time.
You know,
what were you saying?
Prehistoric.
Sorry.
Yes, it is prehistoric. So this morning,
yes,
as Nick DiGilio would do, so we have a live performer in the studio, Craig Kenning, who performs all over the country, but all around town.
And
especially.
What does he do? Play a guitar? Or
he does play a guitar, oh. And he sings, and we're going to hear that this morning.
Wow.
It is, as you know, Memorial Day weekend. It's a day that... it's more than just about picnics. It's a day
yes,
we should be celebrating.
We had an in-depth conversation about that exact thing.
Yes.
But, you know, you're talking about it, honoring Nick DiGilio's show, and if you're going to truly honor it, then you would have your dad calling in to tell a joke, just saying.
I would do that, yes. But instead what we're going to do is we're going to... talk with Richard Lanny. He's the director of a movie that is all about the first military working dog. It's a true story. This dog named Sergeant Stubby was celebrated not by one, but by two American presidents for
wow.
all the lives this dog saved
right.
in battle.
Wow.
When no one at
oh
that time
gosh.
Thought of anything like the term even military working dog or even allowing dogs to do anything in the military. I mean, after all, this was World War I.
Sure.
And what this dog would do, this dog would run to French villages and bark. And the villagers quickly learned that this barking is a warning
meaningful.
Of gas
yeah.
attacks. They would put on, apparently, gas masks back in the day.
Sure.
And save thousands wow. of lives.
Did
thousands
they have
and
masks
thousands.
On the dogs?
Well, this dog actually wore a mask.
Yeah.
They fitted, good right. question, they fitted a mask for this one individual
Well, otherwise
dog.
The dogs wouldn't make it to the next
well,
one.
Well, and
you
this
know?
Was the only military working dog at the time.
Wow.
You know,
wow.
The term wasn't even invented. So we will talk to the director of the movie, but I will also talk to a member of the U.S. Marine Corps. His name is Matthew, and he has, I mean, this is going to be real. I mean, he will talk about what he has seen and how soldiers, his colleagues, come back, and what some of them are prepared for or, in many cases, not prepared for. And I have a story about elephants.
Wow. Very good. Well, you know
and you
what?
You don't get that on every
Not every
show.
Single time.
I know.
And you like Lisa said, you know, if this was the Nick DiGilio show, his dad would call in with a joke. And
so
I am going to do that right
joke.
Now with you.
You're
I'm going to call you right now and give you a joke. And it's
okay.
going to be an animal joke.
Okay, Dad.
What do you
go
think
ahead.
Of that?
I love it. Tell me.
All right. So I'm Steve Dale's dad. right now.
No, you're not Steve Dale's dad. Oh, you're going to be Steve Dale's dad.
Well, you have 20 seconds to tell me the joke.
No. We got it's nighttime. We can go past it. You ready?
Okay.
So there was this guy, and he had a pig with three legs.
Oh, no.
So his pig had three legs. So his friend said to him, "Why does your pig have three legs?"
Reasonable question.
He says, "Well, one time I was on my tractor, and a tractor tipped over on me, and it was crushing me to death. And my pig came running and pushed this tractor off me and saved my life." He says, "Well, that doesn't explain why it has three legs." He goes, "Well, one time I fell in the creek, and I can't swim. Fell in the creek, and I was drowning. And my pig came running and tied a lasso to its tail, threw it to me, and saved my life." He says, "Yeah, but that doesn't explain why. Why does your pig have three legs?" He says, "Well, a pig like that, you don't eat all at once." You know what the pig's name was?
No.
Eileen. All right, there's
your
joke.
You work with this guy every week, huh?
I have no comments. I know when to be quiet, and this is that time.
Yeah, I know a good lawyer, actually.
Lisa knows a good lawyer, too. She's married to one. All right, we'll have a great show, Steve.
Yeah.
You're welcome.
I owe you.
You can win a 2018 Chevy Silverado. For details, listen
More
to Steve Cochran. Weekday mornings at 7:20.
Cochran doesn't tell jokes like that.
No, he doesn't.
No.
At 7:20 WGN Chicago. If you're a smart speaker, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn. Stay tuned. Steve Dale is up next.